You are listening to End of Life University Podcast, real talk about life and death. This is episode number 191. Welcome to End of Life University Podcast. I'm your host, Dr. Karen Wyatt, hospice physician, author, and educator. In this podcast, I share thoughtful conversations with experts in various fields related to dying and death, and informative teaching sessions on preparing for the end of life by living fully today. Hey, everybody, welcome back to the podcast. I'm glad you're here joining me today. This is actually in the middle of Easter weekend as I'm recording this, and I know it will broadcast on the Monday after Easter. So for all of you out there who might have been celebrating this holiday, happy Easter, happy Passover, happy spring celebration, whatever it might be for you. I hope that you've had a wonderful and restful weekend with the people that you love. Today, I'll be sharing with you part 6 of the Mortal Wisdom series, and the topic today is the power of the broken heart, why love is the answer. And so I'm excited. This is one of my favorite topics and one thing I'm very excited to share with you. I have a lot of great stories to tell you today. But also, today is a day when I myself am feeling very loved. I just celebrated my birthday this past week and I had a wonderful time with my family and loved ones. I got to do all of my favorite activities. I did yoga, went for a bike along the beach. I went for a hike and saw wildflowers that were gorgeous. I also went for a mindfulness meditation walk on the beach at low tide, which was incredible. And I built a lovely mandala on the beach, which is one of my favorite practices. So I had an absolutely stellar day for my birthday and still feeling great from that day. And I also received so many wishes of love and blessings from many of you out there who are listeners and many other people. And I just want to thank all of you who reached out to me to make that day very special for me. Thank you so much. A couple of announcements that I've been making every week, but I'll just mention it again, that I'll be co-teaching a course on the spirituality of chronic illness with Terry Daniel. It starts July 9th. It's an online course that lasts for 8 weeks. There are 2 sessions each week. CEUs are available for this course, and it's being taught through the Applied Wisdom Institute and the University of Redlands. And Terry and I are both really looking forward to sharing this online class with people. We'll be talking a little bit about psychology, spirituality, chaplaincy, working with patients who have chronic illness, and learning how to take a spiritual view of illness. That's in particular one of my interests, so I'm very excited to be able to share that. If you want to know more about the course and where to register, you can go to this shortened link, which it's a bit.ly link. So it's bit.ly/chronic illness course. When you type that in, you'll go to the page for the website, but I'll also leave a link for the course on the show notes for this episode at eolupodcast.com. And this is episode number 191. You'll find it on a link in this episode show notes, but also in all the show notes, really, for recent episodes up until the course registration closes. I'll mention it every single week. And I'm also letting everyone know that there will be an expo this fall in November called the Beautiful Dying Expo in San Diego. And it's something right now is the time when you can sign up if you'd like to be a vendor and have a booth to display your work or your organization. You can sign up now to have a vendor booth at the expo, but you can also sign up if you'd like to teach a workshop, perhaps do a book signing, present a film for screening. There are lots of openings there if you'd like to participate. I'm already committed to be one of the facilitators for the event. It's a two-day expo, the Beautiful Dying Expo, and you can go to beautifuldyingexpo.com to learn more about it and find out how you can sign up. And this promises to be an absolutely spectacular event. It's something that I think we've needed. I think we're ready for it. An event where we actually bring together everyone who's working in the end of life arena from all different spectrums and different approaches, but we can all come together and network and meet one another and really join our energy together behind this cause that we all care so much about. So again, that's beautifuldyingexpo.com. And I hope to see you there in November. I think it's November 2nd and 3rd. So check it out and look into coming and letting everyone else know about the work that you're doing there. And finally, today, I'd like to thank my newest supporters on my page at patreon.com/EOLU, Mayna Dubetz and Deborah Luscombe. Thank you so much, Mayna and Deborah, for signing up and joining the team on my Patreon page. I'm really grateful to you and to all of the other supporters who've been making monthly contributions to help keep this podcast on the air. It means everything to me, number one, to have your financial support to help offset the expenses of creating the podcast, but also just to know that you're out there listening and that you appreciate the work that I'm doing and putting forward for you. It means everything to me. So thanks again to all of you. If you'd like to join the team, you can go to Patreon, patreon.com/EOLU. And you can be one of the first people there to purchase the End of Life University coffee mug, which says End of Life University on one side and on the other side, Mind If We Talk About Death. And so you can have a chance to purchase that coffee mug and be one of the few people anywhere who owns one. So when you join the team, you'll be able to find the link for that if you'd like to join one. So thanks again to all of you out there. And always thanks to all of you who are listeners and just show up every week to hear what I have to say. I wouldn't be doing it if it weren't for you and if there weren't an audience out there for what I have to share. So the fact that you listen and that you write reviews on iTunes and also that you just let me know you're there by sending me text messages or messages on Instagram or email messages, that means everything to me and helps me feel connected to all of you to an even greater extent. So thank you once again. And now we'll move on to the feature of today's episode, which is The Power of the Broken Heart, Why Love is the Answer. And as I already mentioned, this is part 6 of the Mortal Wisdom series, where I'm sharing with you some of my thoughts on what we can learn from the fact that we're mortal, what we can learn from facing up to our death and realizing that we won't be here forever. So I've been looking forward to talking about this subject for quite a long time because it has been part of my own spiritual journey, love, that I've been working on for many, many years. And I may have told this story already, but I will tell it to you today relative to this particular episode about love, that back when I was 16, I was the first time I really awakened to death and the possibility that I could die at any time. And that happened because a classmate and friend of mine, Jolene, died very unexpectedly in a hiking accident in the mountains near where we lived. And so it was quite a shock to all of us who were friends with Jolene, but particularly shocking because of the awareness for me that anyone can die at any age. And up to that time, I had really only experienced the deaths of my grandparents. And actually, when I was very young, I had an older cousin die in a car accident, but I wasn't quite old enough or rational enough to really contemplate death at that young age when he died. So this was the first time it really became obvious to me that if Jolene could die, I could also die. And so I may have talked about this in the context of really wanting to consider the purpose for my life and to understand why I was here, because suddenly nothing made sense to me. I had been planning for a number of years to become a doctor one day and really believed that was my purpose. But when I recognized that I could actually die at any time and not fulfill that purpose for my life, I was just thrown into a conundrum, because suddenly nothing made sense. Life began to seem very random and all up to chance. And I struggled with the idea, like, how do I know that being a doctor is my purpose? Because that could be wiped out at any time and I don't have control over it. And the way this conundrum resolved for me was that I had an epiphany after a nap one day. I awoke with the word love in my head, and suddenly I knew, I just had this understanding that the reason I'm here in this lifetime is to learn about love, and that my understanding of my purpose to be a doctor was really in service of my need to learn about love. And suddenly the world made sense to me again, because I understood that if I'm here on this planet to learn about love, and being a doctor is just a vehicle for learning about love, then it won't matter if I die young and I never get to be a doctor. I can start right now working on learning about love, and I can accomplish that at any time so that I will not ever have died too young or died without fulfilling my purpose, as long as I started working on learning about love right away. So this is how I began to make sense of the world for me at age 16. But the relevant part today that I want to talk about is the fact that I understood my reason for being here on the planet to be to learn everything I could about love. And at the age of 16, I'm not really, you know, looking back, I don't think I had the deepest perspective possible on love. I think at that point, I probably understood love to be romantic love and, you know, having crushes on boys. That was my experience of love, really. And so I was really starting at the very beginning to understand what love is and how we learn to experience love, to give it away and to receive it from others. And in the very beginning, at that young age, I started out by reading books. I would go to the bookstore and I would look for books that had love in the title, not fiction books, mind you, because I'm sure I could have found a number of those, but that might not have told me very much. I looked for nonfiction books about love that seemed to have some sort of a spiritual focus or perhaps a psychological focus. And I did quite a lot of reading to help me understand love and to help me learn about it, not knowing at that time that you don't really learn about love from reading. You can learn theories and you can gain knowledge about love, but that doesn't really tell you anything. It is the experience of love for other people that helps you grow. So at that same time, I did begin having a few experiences, a few ventures. I volunteered at, it was a little daycare center for children from underprivileged families one summer when I was in high school. And so I got to spend tons of time with these little, like, preschool age children, holding them on my lap and reading books to them. And I remember, like, how profound it was for me, because I was feeling the stirrings of love, like this deep, compassionate love for these little children as I held them and nurtured them and played games with them and really just spent time being in their presence. And that was really the awakening for me of recognizing that love, it's not just something romantic that we feel for our partner that we'll spend our life with. That love is something that awakens in us for other people, for life itself, for nature, for animals, plants, for everything and anything, and love also for God. And love for all of our fellow men and men and women on the planet. And so I began to feel this awakening that summer. I remember that very clearly. And I understood that this was extremely important. What I was working on and what I was feeling and what I was nurturing within myself was going to be very important for me one day when I became a doctor. It made sense to me that love had this power to it, because I could see that the more I could feel this genuine love and compassion toward the children I was working with at that daycare center, the more I could see them blossom, I could see them shining, I could see the joy on their faces. And I began to recognize that love is powerful. Love is a force that makes a difference in other people's lives. And then it was very clear to me how learning about love would connect with my medical career, because the more I understood love, the more I could harness the power of love, the more I would be able to help my patients. So this idea was firmly implanted in my mind at a fairly young age. And I continued to work on my thoughts about love and philosophies. I continued to read about love and continued to try to experience love when and wherever I could. And of course, I had love for my family members, but it felt different to me than that awakening that I felt when I was working with those little children and feeling compassion for them. And so I knew there was something powerful there that I needed to keep developing. But I didn't have as many opportunities to work on that as I went through college. It wasn't until I got into medical school and started my medical training when I actually started working with patients, that once again I felt the stirrings of this deep force within me that seemed to have a healing power that was activated when I was with someone who was suffering and hurting. And as I began my medical studies, and particularly clinical work with patients, that I saw this power of love be activated within me. And there was a point, it was actually the very first day of medical school, I said something to a group of my fellow students and a faculty member about the idea that I believed in that love has healing power. And I recognized right away, I saw it on their faces, that this is not a subject that is ever really talked about during medical training, and that I was way out of place and considered off base even for talking about love in that setting. So it became very clear to me, I thought of it as my love project was my own project that I would need to work on and develop over time and not really share with other people, because no one else seemed to think that it was important and no one else seemed to think that it had a place in medicine. But I understood there was something to it. Love is this powerful force, and that if I genuinely want to help people, and if I would like to help them heal or become more whole or have a better quality of life, love was the way I could do that, not pills or techniques or surgeries or procedures or diagnostic tests, but love was actually the vehicle for helping people heal, even when I use those other modalities as a doctor. So I wanted to explain all this to you to give you an idea of how this foundation of love became important to me in my work as a doctor, and how it informed me, especially during those early years of my medical training. And though I was operating kind of in secret, I wasn't able to talk to anyone else about it or share these ideas with anyone. I was able to continue using love throughout my residency training. And then when I first got involved in medical practice, and there, in fact, when I was operating my own clinic space, I had my own office. The patients were all my own patients who had chosen to come to see me. That's when I felt like my love medical practice really took off. I really saw the power of it because I didn't have anyone else to answer to. I didn't have anyone else supervising me or looking over my shoulder that I was trying to hide my love project from. I was able to be with patients and to allow this feeling of love and compassion to flow through me to them. And I was seeing results from it. In fact, I became extremely busy right away. I had a 6-month waiting list to get an appointment to see me. And that was for new patients to come in. It was 6 months before they could get an appointment to see me. So I was very popular. Patients were coming back. I was hearing so much positive feedback. And I understood it was this ability to love, to be in a space where I was channeling this, what I perceived as a divine power of love that I was channeling to other people. But 3 years into that very successful medical practice of love, that's when my father took his own life. And that tragedy completely shattered and broke me apart. The tragedy of my dad taking his life, my dad, who was a person that I loved more than anyone in the world, and so much for my theory of love and the healing power of love, so much for that. I couldn't save or heal one of the people I loved the most on the planet. And so my dad's death shattered me personally. It shattered my belief in my love project and my confidence as a doctor, and completely tore apart everything about me that I had been operating on. It destroyed my foundation, my foundational belief system as a doctor. And I know I've talked about this a lot before, so you've heard me tell this story before, but particularly it was my belief in love that came under scrutiny and into question for me, as I said, because all of this, all of my loving, all of my channeling of divine love didn't mean anything when my dad became depressed and was suicidal and then ultimately took his life. It didn't help. It didn't make a difference. So I was broken and shattered by my father's death. And that is when my experience of the broken heart began. It was my dad's death that completely broke my heart apart. It took me many, many years to begin to bring the pieces together, and also many years to understand the power of having a broken heart. And so that's the introduction to what I wanted to talk to you a little bit about today, is the fact that when we do love others, and that actually is, it's the greatest commandment. It's actually the greatest task we could undertake in our lives, to learn how to love others. But when we actually do that work, we put ourselves at risk for being broken, because love always breaks us apart. Love always breaks our hearts. And that's one of the greatest challenges of love, and one of the reasons some people fear it so much, they won't go near it. They won't go there. They won't allow themselves to have a deeply intimate, caring relationship with other people, because they fear the brokenness that comes about when you make yourself vulnerable in that way. And if you're familiar with my story, you know that part of my healing work after my dad's suicide death was to start volunteering for hospice. And that's what led me into the whole end-of-life field and to begin working with death and dying. And It was there that I rediscovered the power of love, and that I also discovered the fact that having been broken open and broken apart, my capacity for love for other people was even greater than it had been before. Again, it took many years for me to recognize that and understand it. But what began to happen right away is that I began to see the importance of love through the eyes of my dying patients. So sitting at the bedside with my patients and listening to them and talking to them about what was important to them helped me rediscover and get realigned with my own love project that I had been practicing before my dad's death. So many patients I saw talk to me about love and what it meant to them as they were dying. And that's why love is one of the most important lessons of our mortality, is because when it comes down to it, when we've been stripped of everything else, we've been stripped of our physical abilities, our health, stripped of our physical beauty by illness and disease. When we can't do anything else, we're bedridden and there's nothing else that we can do. Love becomes that much more important because it is something we can continue to do regardless of the status of our health. And so many patients talk to me about love. They talk to me about who they loved, why they loved them, how much they loved them. They also talk to me about how they had failed to love at times, how they had given up on love, how they had actually walked away from love in their lives, and how much they regretted it at that moment as they were facing the end of life. And so many people said, "I wish I had done love differently in my life." Now, the good news is that most of them were actually able to make amends for the love they felt they had failed to give in the past. Most of them actually had opportunities to still love other people. They still had family members and friends around them that were just waiting for an opportunity to give and receive love with them. And so I got to see that play out over and over again. Those people who awakened and said, "Oh my gosh, love is really the only thing that matters to me right now." Those people who had that deep intention to give and receive love with others in their lives were able to do it from their deathbeds. They were able to have powerful, meaningful connections, even though they couldn't raise their heads off the pillow. They were able to hold hands and look deeply in someone else's eyes and say with more power and more depth and more courage and more authenticity than ever before in their lives, "I love you," to other people. And witnessing that over and over again, I was convinced even more of the importance of love. But also, again, the fact that it's when we're broken, like people who are dying of an illness whose health has been shattered, have an even greater capacity and power to transmit pure, unadulterated love. That's what I saw with my own eyes. And that we don't need to fear being broken open or broken apart, because that vulnerability actually allows us to love in an even deeper way. So one little story that I've shared before was with a patient of mine, Ted, who told me, and Ted was a very wealthy man. He spent his whole career amassing wealth and material goods. He lived in a beautiful mansion. He had several very expensive cars. His house was full of antiques. He owned everything material he could ever have dreamed of and had a huge amount of money in the bank, but he lived alone. And I remember seeing him 2 weeks before he died. He said, "I only just now figured out that love is the most important thing in life." And he said, I spent my whole life pushing love away from me so that I could focus on my career and my wealth and my money and my possessions. And he told me he was estranged from his wife and his son. He hadn't seen them for many, many years. And at this point, he was devastated because now being able to love particularly his son was the only thing that mattered to him, to be able to make up for all those years of distance and separation and all those years of absent love. He wanted only to be able to love his son again. And again, the good news, we were able to help him contact his son who came to visit him. So he had that moment, that transformative moment of finally sharing love with his son before he died. And perhaps Ted could not have loved his son in that way until he was dying. Perhaps it was necessary for Ted to be broken apart in the way he was by his illness before he could share that love with his son. We will never know that. But it occurs to me that for some people, love doesn't come earlier in their lives because it isn't the right timing or they're just not capable of experiencing it. So Ted was another great example of the fact that it's never too late to love. It's always possible to give and receive love as long as we're conscious, and perhaps even when we're unconscious, who knows, that there's a transmission of love happening. That's something I haven't been able to study or experience yet for myself. And I have another really beautiful story to share with you, which is the story of my friend Mary Lou, who was dying of breast cancer. And Mary Lou, because she was my friend and not my patient, Mary Lou and I spent quite a lot of time together in the last few months of her life. And we talked a lot about these lessons and these tasks that are necessary at the end of life. And in particular, we had talked about forgiveness because Mary Lou had an older sister that she had not been particularly close to for most of her adult life. Her older sister, in her mind, had been very mean to her. She believed her older sister had a mental illness of some sort, even though it had never been diagnosed. And she had never gotten close to her sister, and she'd felt in many ways emotionally abused by her sister and had never wanted to spend time with her. So they had just been distant from one another all of their adult lives. So Mary Lou spent a lot of time in her last few months of life working on forgiveness for her sister because she didn't want to die with bad feelings and negativity in her heart toward her sister. And she didn't feel that she needed to talk with her sister. She felt that forgiveness was something she needed to do by herself on her own. And she consciously worked on recalling memories of things that had happened with her sister and then letting go of them and letting it go and saying in her mind to her sister, "I forgive you. You couldn't help how you treated me. And I understand that that was the best you could do. I understand that you're flawed. And this is the best that you could do. And I forgive you for your treatment of me." And so each time I met with Mary Lou, she would tell me about her progress. And she was doing some great work in terms of letting go of all kinds of old memories and little episodes she had recalled from the past with her sister, and really felt like she was getting over it and getting through it and getting beyond the resentment and anger that she had held on to for a long time. So about 2 weeks or so before Mary Lou died, I came to visit her one more time. And by this point, each time I went with her, she was saying, "I'm so glad I'm done with forgiveness. I'm so glad I've worked through it. I feel like I'm complete." And I had asked her, "Do you feel like you need to talk to your sister? Do you feel like you need to see her?" And she said, "No, I think that would ruin it. Because if I did see her, she would probably say something terrible to me. And then I'd be having another thing to forgive." And she said, "The way it is right now, at a distance, my forgiveness is complete and it feels perfect. And I'm very happy and very satisfied about it. But a couple of weeks before Mary Lou died, when I visited her, she had a concern and a sense of urgency. And she said, I need to see my sister. And she said, my husband doesn't think it's a good idea, but I need to see her. Will you convince him to call her and ask her to come and visit me before I die? And I said, yes, but what changed your mind? What made you decide you need to see her? And she said, because I need to love her. And it was so powerful to hear her say these words, because she'd done all this work with forgiveness, but after she had emptied herself of anger and bitterness and resentment toward her sister, what filled her up instead was love. And she realized, all of these years that I've stayed away from her and just nurtured my anger toward her, I never expressed love to her. And that's what's still missing. I need to tell her I love her. And Mary Lou said, you know, when I forgave her because I saw her as flawed. But she said, now all I feel is love for her. And I don't see her as flawed anymore. I see her as the perfect sister for me. She's the perfect person for me to have grown up with and to have learned about forgiveness and love with. And I need to tell her. And she said, I need to thank her for being who she is and for being exactly who she was our whole lives together. And indeed, that happened. Her sister did come for a visit. And that was such a powerful lesson for me, that sometimes forgiveness alone is not enough. And just as I described, when we forgive and we release all of the negativity that we've been holding on to toward another person, we make space for more love to come within us. And Mary Lou felt so powerfully filled with that love for her sister that she needed one more opportunity to see her sister and talk about love and share her love with her. And I thought it was beautiful that Mary Lou's view of her sister transformed from seeing her sister as, I forgive you because I know you're flawed. I know there's something wrong with you, and that's why you're not really responsible for how you treated me, to saying instead, I love you and you are the perfect sister for me, and I love you just as you are. And those words, you were flawed and you couldn't help it, disappeared. That kind of love, when we are able to see someone in our lives as perfect for who they are, those are transformative words. That kind of love, not only did it heal Mary Lou, but that kind of love healed her sister as well when she was able to express it to her before she died. And I wanted to share with you a couple of quotes. These are from Hafez, who is a Persian poet who lived after the time of Rumi, the Sufi poet you may have heard of, Rumi. Hafez lived after Rumi did, and he studied the poetry of Rumi and the teachings of Rumi, and so was basically a student of his. But Hafez was as well a beautiful mystical poet, and I love some of the many quotes and sayings I've been collecting from Hafez. So I have two from Hafez. The first one says, even after all this time, the sun never says to the earth, you owe me. Look what happens with a love like that. It lights up the whole sky. And so that quote, it's beautiful to think that when we love just freely without attachments, we don't ever ask anyone else to give us anything back, and we don't expect them to treat us in any certain way. We are able to be the sun and to light up the sky for that other person. And then the next quote from Hafez follows up on this, and he says, carry your heart through this world like a life-giving sun. So I love this image of the fact that when we are When we are filled with love, we become a sun for other people. We become the light that can light up their world. And we're no longer looking for their flaws or trying to see what was wrong with them and how they harmed us because something about them was defective. We are simply the sun carrying light, the light of love that can illuminate everything for them and allow them the opportunity to heal and grow. That's what I think Mary Lou became for her sister. She became this life-giving sun who allowed her sister to heal in the presence of her light in those last few weeks of her life. Now, I do want to clarify, and I talked a little bit about this during the last session of the series on forgiveness, that some of us have been wounded very badly. Some of us have been abused by others physically, emotionally, spiritually, mentally, by other people, sexually abused. And finding forgiveness and finding love for those abusers, that's a challenge that can take a lifetime or many lifetimes to work on. And so when I talk about these ideas, I don't mean to be implying that anyone who has been harmed to that degree should be able to just instantly decide to forgive another person or be filled with love for that other person. I think that when you have received that kind of harm from another person, that is a lifelong curriculum of work, of spiritual work for you. And so in no way am I implying that you should be able to just suddenly forgive and feel love for a person who has harmed you that deeply. I have great respect for that journey, the journey of abuse and the struggle to heal after abuse has occurred. And so I understand from what I have witnessed and experienced and heard from other people, the depth of that journey, and that it is a massive undertaking to go on that journey at all. So I want you to know that if you are one of those people who has experienced that level of abuse, some of what I'm saying may not apply to you in the moment as something that you can use right now, something that you should be trying to enact right now in this moment, because you may have a lot further to travel on your journey of healing before you're ready for forgiveness and ready for this type of love. So I'm offering it as perhaps an omega point for the future, as perhaps someplace that someday down the road you will get to that will be possible for you. But also, it's perfectly okay if it's not possible, because sometimes the journey of healing from abuse is its own process in life. It has its own way of teaching you, and it's a different process of learning. And so anyway, I wanted to qualify that and clarify that for anyone out there who feels who feels very far away from the idea of forgiveness and feeling love. Don't feel that there's anything wrong with you. You are just in your own process, and you are where you are, which is perfect for you. So allow yourself time and space and room for whatever healing needs to take place for you. And don't feel that I'm shaming you or blaming you or encouraging you even to try to rush through that process. So anyway, I wanted to offer that to any of you out there who are carrying this extremely heavy burden of having lived through abuse in your life. And I wanted to talk a little bit more about how love breaks us apart. And I did mention my own story of being broken apart by grief over my dad's death. But grief is one of the most common ways that we are broken, because the people that we love will die. And They do leave our physical presence, and we have to cope with the deep pain of grief after the death of someone we love. And so that's one of the most common ways that we are broken apart the most deeply by love. And for me, that's how it happened. That's how I was broken in the first place. But there are many other ways that we are broken by love, and sometimes it's by a relationship ending, not because a person died, but because the relationship dies, because we decide to leave the relationship, or the other person decides to leave. And that can be an experience of brokenness that sometimes feels worse than death, because the other person is simply not present in any way in our lives, but we know that they are present somewhere else with other people and with someone else, but we no longer have them in our own physical presence. After a death, for some of us, we're able to feel the presence of our loved one still in a spiritual form and imagine our loved one with us and surrounding us and watching over us. When a relationship has broken up and we've said goodbye to someone that we have loved, that person is still on the planet, still walking around, still loving someone else, and we have to live without them in our lives, which in some ways can be an even bigger process of adjustment and an even deeper type of breaking apart. But love can also break us in other ways, by being betrayed by someone that we love, perhaps a friend who lets us down or turns on us. We can be abandoned by people we love. Even unrequited love, when we love someone who doesn't love us back. And from a distance, we feel yearning and longing to be close to another person who somehow cannot recognize that and cannot give love back to us. That can be a breaking apart that's very lonely and filled with deep longing for us. We can also be used and abused by people that we love. Another way that we're betrayed by love at times, because those who say they love us might take advantage of us, might also abuse us in our relationship, and it might be our willingness to love and our vulnerability to love that opens the door for another person to hurt us even more. So these are all ways in which loving others leads us to be broken and to be hurt. And the more deeply we love, the more vulnerable we are, and the more we can be broken apart by love. But what I came to understand, and similar to the experience that Mary Lou had, it is when we're broken open that we become emptied out and hollowed out inside, in a way. So when we're broken by our love, we become more and more open and more able to fill ourselves with what I think of as divine love, and more able to channel and carry that love for other people and spread it to other people. That's why being broken open by love, it is such a powerful experience, because it allows us to transmit even more love to others and to be an even better vessel and channel for love to flow to other people. One of the metaphors that I really like to use is the idea of an instrument, say a violin. And a violin can only play music if it's hollow inside. You know, a solid piece of wood in the shape of a violin with strings on it will not play very beautiful music. It's only when the violin is hollowed out inside that beautiful notes emanate when the strings are plucked. And if you think of that imagery, for us to be beautiful vessels of the music of love, we have to become hollow inside. And that happens to us oftentimes in painful ways in life. Life hollows us out. Love makes us vulnerable to this hollowing experience through all different types of loss and grief and pain. We become hollow inside, and the more hollow we are, the more beautiful the music we can make, the larger container we become for divine love, and the greater our capacity for sharing that love with other people. So that image of the violin being hollowed out in order to play beautiful music, that is the basis of one of the practices I wanted to recommend for visualizing how to become a better channel of love. And I think the first thing is to keep that image in your mind of becoming an instrument of love, a beautiful instrument that has to be hollowed inside in order to play the notes. And so you might think about and journal about the ways in which love has hollowed you, the ways in which love has broken you open and emptied you out inside. And you might journal about that a little bit, like how has love worked on you so far during your life, and what pain has love put you through in your life? How have you been broken? How have you been emptied out by love? And if you can begin to change your mindset a little bit about those experiences that have broken you, and if you feel regret or anger or resentment or bitterness about those experiences, to begin to soften your perspective and your view of those experiences, to begin to look at them as perhaps love as an artist that has been carving you all of this time, that has been making a beautiful sculpture out of your life. And while it hasn't felt wonderful, while you have experienced pain in the process, love has been having its way with you, shaping you and forming you into a vessel that can carry more love. So this visualization of seeing yourself as perhaps a hollow instrument that's capable of playing beautiful music is the first step in changing your mindset about love and how love has treated you during your life so far. And this might take quite a lot of time, writing down all of the ways love disappointed you, betrayed you, abandoned you, hurt you, crushed you, shattered you. And think about the consequences of all of those experiences. And have you allowed yourself to become emptied by love or hardened by the pain? So that's something important as well. If you think about the fact that it's quite possible to recoil from the pain of love, the pain that love can cause, and push away from it and refuse to allow love in. And that's definitely one of the responses that many of us have after we've been hurt. And so you might want to journal about that a little bit. Are there ways in which you have avoided love and walked away from love and built a wall from love in order to shield yourself from pain? And think about, what do you need to do to begin to let the wall down and to begin to let down the defensiveness so that love has a chance to enter again? And I'm not saying, I'm not particularly talking about romantic love here, and that, oh gosh, I'm going to let my wall down and go out and find a partner to love. I'm only saying to think about when you've excluded a certain type of love from your life, you may be able to introduce more love in another way. Maybe there's a way that you share love differently. Maybe you help tend a garden and you love the garden and you love the flowers as you're tending to them, or the vegetables that you're growing. Maybe you volunteer at an animal shelter and you find love for the animals that you're able to visit with and walk take for walks during the day. Maybe you volunteer at a nursing home or a hospice and you spend time with people who need to be loved. So I'm not saying it has to come through an intimate relationship. It can come through many other types of relationships. And maybe you focus on love by simply deciding to smile when you walk down the street. Maybe your expression of love is to greet the cashier at the grocery store as you're checking out and say, "Hello, how are you today?" Maybe that is how you work on opening yourself a little bit to love, is simply to letting a little bit of your positive spirit, of your light, shine through your smile, through kind words to another person, through a compliment, through a hug, through being of service to someone else. So the next step after you identify where you have maybe refused to love is to think of comfortable ways that you could incorporate a little bit of love into your life now. How do you bring more loving, more shining your light into each day? And as you do that, you will be gradually letting go of some of the old bitterness or the painful memories that you've been hanging on to, and gradually emptying yourself to make more and more room for more love and more light to shine through you. The next practice that I recommend, it's something that I use often in my meditation / prayer / contemplation sessions that I have during the day, which again, it's another visualization, and I use it with my breath. And so it begins for me with exhalation. As I breathe out, I imagine that I'm letting go of tension. I'm letting go of my fear, my anger, my doubt, whatever has accumulated since the previous day when I did this exercise. And I, with each exhalation, I release whatever has been stored in me that feels negative, and I let it go as I breathe out. And at the same time, when I breathe in on my inhalations, I begin to envision, for me, it's sunlight. I see actual rays of light coming in through the top of my head and filling up the space that's been left behind as I empty out all the negativity and all the bad feelings. So the more I release the negative feelings that have accumulated, the more space I make so that now this sunlight can pour in through my head and begin to fill me up inside. And I usually see this taking place in my heart. So I'm releasing from my heart negativity, and I'm opening my heart, my broken heart, for more love to come in, and the light of this love that pours into me. I keep focusing on exhaling out the negative until it starts to feel to me like I've accomplished that, till I start feeling like I'm really more and more full of light and love, and until I can feel it shining inside of me. And instead of having a heavy, uncomfortable burden around my heart, I feel light and warmth and love that is circulating inside of me and filling me up inside. And at a certain point, I begin to shift my visualization so that now with each exhalation, I see this light and love passing through me out to other people. And so all the light and love that I've been accumulating and filling up my empty spaces with, I'm overflowing with so much that I can spread it to other people. And so I start visualizing sometimes like the people closest to me, my family members that I love so much. I visualize them and I send them rays of this beautiful love and light that's coming through me. And once I've surrounded them with the light and love, I start moving out to other people, to friends and more distant relatives and to neighbors and people in my community. And I keep spreading and spreading this circle of love that I'm radiating and sending out. It's emanating out like ripples, like when you drop a stone into a pond. And so I see the love radiating out in concentric circles and ripples that are traveling all around the planet, really, ultimately, as I do this exercise. So for me, every day, this is a really beautiful way of visualizing emptying out the resentment and the negativity and making space for more light and love to enter, and then sharing it actively with other people and with the rest of the planet, including the planet itself, the oceans, the forests, the animals and the plant life on the planet. So that's a visualization that I use every day that's very powerful for me to really enact this scenario of being broken open and emptied and then filled with love, and to see myself becoming over time a more and more capable vessel for love, with greater capacity, but also greater fluidity in terms of receiving the love and then spreading it to others. And also with being able to let go of the negativity within me with greater and greater ease. The more I practice this activity, the more easily I can let go of what I've been hanging on to and whatever has been stored inside of me, the more easily I can empty myself in order to receive the love and fill myself up with it so that I can share it with other people. So those are just a couple of ideas I have for how you might practice if you decide that you would like to work on becoming a bigger, deeper vessel for love in your own life. And I wanted to share with you before we say goodbye a verse that comes from the Tao of Death, which is an adaptation I wrote of Lao Tzu's Tao Te Ching, a very ancient text, more than 2,000 years old, that has wisdom. The Tao means the way. And so this book, The Tao of Death, is the way of death. And I adapted Lao Tzu's verses into verses that focus on death and focus on our mortality. And this is verse number 51. I wanted to read it to you because it's about love. And that's how I'm going to end this session today, with this verse. And then also with me saying, I hope that you will be inspired in your own life to take a look at where you are with love right now, your own ability to receive it and to give it to other people, and perhaps to make a conscious practice of working on love. Create your own love project and make a practice of expanding your capacity for love in your life. It will benefit you and everyone around you in so many ways. And I believe it will also be a valuable practice at the very end of life as you are facing your own death, which is what I saw over and over again with my patients. So I wish you much luck and many blessings as you yourself work on your love project in your day-to-day life. So here is verse 51 from the Tao of Death. Love, the creative energy of the universe, gives rise to everything and then draws it back again with perfect timing. This is the way of death. Love breathes life into material form and nurtures, teaches, and protects it, asking nothing in return, until life dissolves once again into love. Knowing that your life is just a single breath of love, cherish everything, cling to nothing. The way of death whispers in your ear, there is only love. And so with that, I just want to thank you for tuning in again today and being here with me. and remind you there'll be a new episode next week, as every Monday there is. Next week will be an interview, and the week after that will be part 7 of the Mortal Wisdom series. Until we're together again, remember that we're here for love. So face your fear, be ready for whatever life brings you next, and love your life just as it is. Love each and every moment. Until next week, bye-bye.